And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on a spectacular day. I mean, it's ginger peachy keen out there. Weather-wise, it's just great. And it's not going to get too hot either. We got the sunshine. It's going to be very, very pleasant. Enjoy. Guest on the program today, we're going to be getting an update on the Mission Act, which is new within the past month or so, I believe, at the VA, the Veterans Administration. Also later on today, have you ever been to Prince Edward Island? One of the maritime provinces of Canada. I suspect there are not too many people who have been there. We're going to take a virtual visit to Prince Edward Island, which was the setting, by the way, for one of the most beloved novels of all time, Anne of Green Gables. We'll be chatting with Catherine Reed about that a little bit later on the program. But first, let's say hello to our guests from VA Butler Healthcare, including the interim director at VA Butler Healthcare. That's Sharon Coyle. Sharon, good to see you again.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. And we also say hello to Steve Jensen, who is customer service specialist with the VA Butler Healthcare. Steve, good to see you as well.
Good morning, everyone.
So, as I recall, the last time we were able to chat, the Veterans Administration nationwide was just getting ready to roll out this Mission Act. Am I remembering that correctly, Sharon?
That's correct.
So, which was back in June, So, did it roll out? Is everything okay?
Everything's been going well, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that. After we chatted the last time, I had a feeling that mission stood for something, because that's the way the federal government works. You know, they come up with these great acronyms, whether it's for a new bill that's in Congress or whatever. So I looked it up, and it does stand for something. M-I-S-S-I-O-N, Mission Act, Maintaining Internal Systems and Strengthening Integrated Outside Networks. I bet nobody's memorized that.
No.
Well, in a nutshell, Interim Director Sharon Coyle, what is the Mission Act? What's it all about anyway?
The largest portion, and the portion that we've rolled out so far to date, expands available services for our veterans. It's to create easier pathways for our veterans to receive care. And the newest benefit and the biggest change for us is urgent care benefit. So now veterans can go to urgent care clinics and receive care as opposed to just the primary care in emergency room.
Mm-hmm. So this could be urgent care centers that are totally apart from the VA, right?
They can be. It has to be one that's under contract. There's multiple ways for a veteran to determine which urgent cares are under contract via the website, or they can call our staff and we can let them know, because that's ever-changing. Mm-hmm. And to note that veterans can still see us for urgent care as well. We are in the process of standing up a sick call clinic, so that'll be up and running by the end of the year. And we do have same-day appointments available at the local site as well.
Well, this will be at the A.B. Abraham Center?
Yes.
On Duffy Road?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is new, Steve? This is something that the Veterans Administration, the VA, never offered before?
They offered it, but it was just in a different context. I mean, one of the things that really drove the Mission Act with what I do is the emotional component that's attached to it. Mm-hmm. So we were listening. We get surveys through SHEP, through V-Signals, which are just different platforms that we collect all this data. And a lot of the veterans, you know, we have had problems with access. I mean, if you look at our organization alone, you know, we bring in 25 to 30,000 veterans and stuff a year.
This is in Butler.
Yeah, that's in Butler.
Wow.
And, I mean, just from our surveys alone, we actually have a good amount of people who are responding back to what they want. Just within the last 90 days, we have close to about 4,000 surveys that veterans have told us, you know, what they like, what's going on. And this Mission Act is what really drives that forward in trying to provide them a better customer experience, not necessarily a customer service, but an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we were looking at, like, the ease and effectiveness of customer service. And in probably the past 4 or 5 years, we added that emotional component to make it customer service and transfer it into customer experience. And that's what can help us drive even more as these new Mission Act.
Now, from what I've learned from talking over the past couple of years with various representatives of VA Butler Healthcare here, there was never any great concern about long delays that we sometimes see on the national news in other parts of the country. It was pretty prompt here.
Oh,
is that
yes.
right, Sharon?
Mm-hmm. And that remains so. We can usually see a new patient within 1 day and a specialty care with or behavioral health within 3 days.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that one of the new options under the Mission Act would be particularly relevant to a veteran who might be traveling or in some other part of the country.
Correct. It's not really pertinent to this area.
Mm-hmm.
The new thing with the Mission Act is there's a statement in there that talks about best medical interest. So together, a patient and their provider can determine, is it within the best medical interest of a veteran to receive care in the community versus going to a VA facility?
Mm-hmm.
So that's new. That creates a little easier pathway for providers and patients to access community care.
We're talking about the Mission Act. If you're not familiar with it, veterans, there's a good reason. It's new. It's brand new. I mean, it just launched last month, and it's a nationwide thing. So when as large as the Veterans Administration is, and I fear that many people don't realize just how big a department that is within the federal government, hundreds of hospitals and medical centers all over the country, to launch something like this nationwide is a pretty big deal, you know, to do it all at once. So it's brand new, so we're learning about it. We're learning more about it. We want to make sure that veterans are, A, not confused, and, B, aware that, for goodness sakes, this is available now. Yeah. Are there any eligibility requirements that we need to know about? Steve, I'll ask you about that if that's in your bailiwick. I'm not sure.
So there are some eligibility requirements that are associated with the Mission Act. Ones that probably a lot of veterans are already accustomed to is that if you're not allowed to see within a certain time of an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So for an example, you come in and the doctor says you want to do a cardiology appointment, and they're like, well, we're 45 days out. Well, that right there is an eligibility requirement because we want to get you seen before that 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example. If it's also a service that we do not cover with inside of the VA or our outpatient clinic, we can also send you out also for those treatments.
Some sort of specialist or something like that.
I know, just from experience, like an example of that would be, cancer treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I know we do send out some veterans and stuff through our facility for cancer treatment just because we don't have that specialized service there. I'll probably let Sharon talk most about this part, but it is the travel requirements with eligibility when it comes to services. Because I know that if you're within a certain distance, if you're outside of a certain distance, you can be eligible, but also the time it's required to get you to travel. So, you may look that it's only 10 miles away, but because of your commute, it may take you an hour to travel to that facility because maybe it's in a Pittsburgh area. And so, we're going to send you somewhere else that can get you there in a little bit better time frame.
But if I'm within, say, 5 miles of the Abraham VA Healthcare Center, the fastest place is right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, like Sharon discussed earlier, we do have some veterans that, after having a discussion with their provider, if they think that going outside the VA is the better choice, that's also, an option. And then the one that I think that really drives it home is the quality of care that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if another facility or another organization that we are, that it's in our network, has a better quality of care. So if like UPMC or somebody like that has better cardiology department than we have, then they could be eligible to go to that better quality of care.
So that would be for a particular condition or a particular problem.
Yes, sir.
I understand that. We want to make sure that people understand when we're talking about how far a veteran would be from a VA healthcare facility. There's in Pittsburgh, there's Erie, and Butler's the only one in between, right?
That's right.
There's no other VA facility in between.
Right.
So you could get people, veterans, who were indeed, significant mileage away, even though Butler VA healthcare might be the closest one.
Correct.
Yeah. What about pay? What about covering the costs if you are eligible and utilize an outside healthcare provider? Is it still covered under your VA benefits, or?
It's covered under VA benefits. There may potentially be co-pays associated, and that depends on what priority group and what level of service connection a veteran would have. So that's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm. A lot of questions, I would imagine, especially early on. How do veterans get their questions answered?
They can call us. Robert Kling is the program manager, and he's put out his contact information for people to call. If veterans call into the medical center and ask, they'll be directed to Robert or one of his staff. There's also information on the website. There was information that was mailed home to veterans as well. So we've been trying to reach people via the town halls. We've been going out to American Legions and different areas where we know veterans gather to try to get this information out there.
And talking to us, because we're, talking to thousands of people at a time here, so that's a good way to publicize it as well.
Yes.
We'll take a quick break, back to talk more with our guests about the Mission Act. It's new, it's nationwide, and it just rolled out last month at VA healthcare centers across the country. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Hey, they've kicked off their weekly collections of excess garden produce. So attention all you backyard gardeners. We're getting to that time of the year where everything comes on at once, like you're waiting for tomatoes, and all of a sudden you've got tomatoes coming out of your eyeballs, and you use them for your family, you give some to the neighbors and to grandma, and you still have some left over. Think about donating those items or any other excess garden produce to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. It's a great treat for the families who depend on the food bank, and they make it very easy to do this every Saturday from now into September when the local gardens phase out. You can drop off your excess garden produce at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Drop-Off Center. It's at St. Michael Hall. It's right behind St. Michael Church on Center Avenue on Butler's south side, and they're there every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. until noon. Drop off your excess garden produce. It'll be distributed through the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank the following Monday, and it'll be on the tables of needy families. So they've done this program for several years now, and it's been a great success, and it's really been a great boon to needy families. So think about it. Don't toss that stuff. Don't let it go bad. Peppers, tomatoes, beans, anything you have. Excess. They don't want all your stuff. Excess. Think about dropping it off. 8 a.m. until noon Saturdays at St. Michael Hall on Center Avenue. If you have any questions about this, you can call Lou at 724-991-6094. We're chatting with the interim director of VA Butler Healthcare. We're certainly pleased to have her with us today, Sharon Coyle. Also with us is Steve Jensen, who is a customer service specialist with VA Butler Healthcare here in our area. Sharon, we should point out that you were appointed as interim director when the previous director had family concerns. His dad was elderly and had problems, and he had to resign and go take care of his father, right?
Right.
Yeah. And when did you take over as interim director? It was just a short time ago.
Yeah, about a month ago. And so I'm appointed to the role until mid-October. I've worked at Butler VA, though, for many years. I've been there for 13 years as the nurse executive.
I was going to say, you're no stranger to VA Butler Healthcare.
No.
So you were nurse executive before?
Yes.
What's that job entail?
So I supervise all of the nursing staff in that role. I have other departments that I supervise as well. I serve as one of the executive leaders of the facility.
Mm-hmm. So you were certainly ready to step in as interim director.
Yeah, I think it's been going smoothly.
Do you get a bigger chair when you step into that?
I get the corner office.
one with the windows.
Right.
Yeah. So how has, in the first month or so now that we've had the Mission Care rolling out here in Butler, okay? Does it seem to be working okay?
I think it's working great. Our staff are so good, and they are very caring for our population, and I think that they've shouldered the workload on their shoulders so that the veterans aren't experiencing the change, issues on their end.
Mm-hmm. this replaced a program. There was something called Veterans Choice or something like that, Choice Program that was in existence before. Is that right? You're shaking your head, Steve.
Yes. Yeah. I'm new to the facility myself, but yes, we did have Choice at one time.
Mm-hmm. So that's now superseded by this new mission program?
Yeah, and the biggest thing, speaking from a veteran myself, I get my care at the Butler Hospital, or, you know, Butler VA. And the biggest thing I always want to tell veterans is that there's not a lot of change on their part when it comes to how they were used to getting, you know, their appointments and, you know, getting outside and all that stuff. It's more on our part because we've had a lot of veterans come in and, you know, feel like, you know, they're confused on what's going on and what they need to do and how they need to interact with us. And, you know, it's really just on their viewpoint. I just went down to the hospital and stuff not too long ago, and it was the same process for me, even though we changed over to a new type of program. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's nothing really to worry about when it comes to what else our veterans need to do. It's just making sure that we're communicating with them.
Well, that's one reason why we wanted to talk to you, to reassure people as much as anything else, veterans or family of veterans, or maybe adult children of aging veterans, not to worry here. You know, well, if this is confusing, we'll get it straightened out in short order, but don't worry about it.
Yes, sir.
One thing we have to make sure of, though, at least I would guess, to be eligible for this, you certainly have to be registered with the Veterans Administration, right, Sharon?
Absolutely. You have to have been seen within the last 2 years to be eligible.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And if you're not registered with the Veterans Administration and you're a veteran, the big question would be, why the heck aren't you registered, right?
Exactly. And even if somebody tried to register years ago and they were maybe denied, they weren't the right priority group, come and try again. Things might have changed. We might be able to work on something to ensure that eligibility.
How do people start that process, by the way? Can they call? Do they have to stop in? Do they have to make an appointment? How does that work?
Well, we're trying to make the process a little bit easier. We created a new patient orientation, and I know it says new patient in the name, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to get veterans to come in. And I know when I first entered the VA, I came in and I was just told to go to the VA when I left the Marine Corps, and that doesn't really leave too much room for you know, figuring out what to do. Yeah. And it's pretty intimidating coming into a facility like that to figure out how you even get registered, how you do your disability claims and all that information. So at the Butler VA, we have the new patient orientation, which is catered to that single individual instead of a group or, you know, having them try to uncover stuff for themselves. So what we started doing is that anytime there's a walk-in coming into the facility that is curious about our services, what we have to offer, the registration component, how to file for disability claims, we meet with them one-on-one and we cater that experience directly to what they need.
Well, this ties in with what you were talking about a few minutes ago when we started our conversation. There's more of an emphasis on the experience of veterans as they're getting medical care through the VA.
Yes, sir. And then through that, you know, we reach out. We do, you know, our post 9/11 veterans, you know, those are the ones that we're really trying to hook up with the transition care management team at our facility that can help them throughout their whole journey and their whole experience.
What's a transitional care management team? What's that all about?
So when I first came into the VA, I didn't know who to go to, and I was hooked up with like a TCM, and they're like a case manager for me. Mm-hmm. So they were pretty much the catch-all. They knew anything and everything I needed to do to get my disability claims in order. If I already had existing disability claims, you know, what's the status of them? What other type of evidence and stuff do I need to, you know, use to support those claims? If I was looking for caregiver support, if I was looking for adult day health care, if I was looking for anything and under the sun, they were the ones that were able to help that. And so it's really nice to have that one-stop shop and that one individual. And we have two of them at the Butler VA that are constantly reaching out and trying to find those individuals, because if there's a difficult spot anywhere, it's transitioning from the military service back into the civilian world, and you don't know exactly where you can go. And we offer additional services past that, even with our vocational rehabilitation program that helps veterans with resume building, that helps them with interviews, and there's lots of other job opportunities and stuff through them too. So we try to share all that during the new patient orientation to let them know that we're here for your whole journey. We're not just here to, you know, write you a script and pass you along. You know, we're here to make sure that everything through your life is taken care of.
I have visited the new, I still call it new, AB Abraham VA Healthcare Center here in Butler on North Duffy Road. It's a little bit intimidating when you first walk inside. A, it's big. A, it's brand new. But there's like an information desk there, right, that would, you know, tell you where to go. And, you know, I don't mean it that way. if you were looking for a particular information, tell you where you should stop in, right?
Yeah, that's our volunteer service desk. And if you've noticed, they wear red coats. Not all of them, but some of them wear red coats. And that's our Red Coat Ambassador program. We have individuals who are in charge of that program, but it's actually pretty extensive. I mean, there's an interview process for our volunteers coming in. Also, we try to educate them. So they actually have TMS training, which is our online educational training that they have to go through. And we have a Master Ambassador Red Coat program where they actually have to go to each one of these sections to learn a little bit more about what they do for the VA. So that way, when we do have a veteran come in or a spouse or whoever, and they have questions, they can direct them from point A to point B as quickly as possible.
You're taken care of straight away, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's the goal.
You mentioned disability claims and information. This may not be in the specific area where either of you could respond, but are those decisions made locally? For example, hypothetically, if I was a veteran and I wanted to discuss that sort of thing, does that get bumped up to Washington or somebody in the Pentagon to make that decision? Or
long process.
It's
a long conversation.
Yeah.
But one thing is that understanding that, you know, you have three different departments of the VA.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people believe that, you know, you come to the VHA and we can deal with benefits. And we can to an extent, but that's not, you know, our focus.
Okay.
We do have individuals at our facility that are VSOs, Veteran Service Officers from the DAV and VFW, that will help veterans with any type of disability claims. And you can sign up, you can sign a power of attorney basically over to them to handle your claims. And we do other things associated with like compensation and pension exams and everything of that nature. But when you talk about the whole claim, it was confusing for me when I first got out. But, you know, the first thing we did was I registered with the VBA to apply for benefits when it came to my service-connected disabilities. And then when the VHA came into hand, it's where I actually had my medical examination. Okay. And then they write it up.
Well, that makes sense. In fact, that's good that it's separate, but I guess it's something I just didn't think of before.
Yep. And we try to, you know, support both sides as much as possible. But we can only go so far into the Veterans Benefits Administration aspect of it. But we, you know, for the most part, we do have those individuals there at our facility who can, pretty much answer any type of questions that
they
have.
So that's a totally separate department then, huh? And you said how many departments are there within the
There's
VA?
Three.
Three?
Yep. You have the, you know, National Cemetery Services and everything. Then you have the VBA. Then you have the VHA, Veterans Health Administration.
I'm shaking my head saying, of course, I should have realized that. Yeah.
So that's the whole journey, though. That's all one goal is that, you know, veteran gets out, we help them with their benefits, we maintain their health, and then, you know, when that time comes that we pass, you know, we take care of them then, too.
Mm-hmm. But disabilities is a separate department.
Yeah. We could talk for hours about that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that is complex. And by the way, you mentioned this, Sharon, earlier. Someone who may have tried to register with the VA years ago, and for one reason or another they couldn't do it, check again, things might have changed. That happens with disabilities too, doesn't it? I mean, over the years, over the decades, can't you apply to get those adjusted?
Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. So things change, conditions change, you know?
Yeah. You have to be a little... I mean, when you're applying, you can always ask for an increase and stuff because obviously there's some conditions that just get more severe over time. Mm-hmm. And so, like for me, for an example, every 5 years I get reevaluated for all my service-connected disabilities. So I go through the process all over again, and that's every 5 years.
Talking about eligibility for the new mission program, and you mentioned it's not just the distance that a veteran lives from a VA healthcare facility, but it's the time that it would take him, the drive time. Do they have guidelines on that? I mean, is it 10 minutes or 10 hours or?
They do. That's the, I can't necessarily remember the exact number that's associated with that. But I'm pretty sure that if it was 10, if I know it's 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's the time. The distance, I believe, is 10 miles. If it's 10 miles and it takes you 60 minutes, then you can be eligible. That's what they kind of let us use for like an elevator speech to veterans, mm-hmm. to kind of let them know that it's the two put together that can establish that.
And in some areas, not everywhere, but it could take an hour to go 10 miles, you know, depending on what kind of urban traffic you had or whatever.
They did a great job rolling this out, and especially our care in the community, because they actually gave us examples on how to communicate with the veterans if they have those discussions. And that was one of the examples that I remembered. That way we can at least communicate a little bit better with them.
We're talking about the Mission Act, which rolled out last month nationwide at the VA healthcare centers. And it empowers veterans in a variety of ways with increased access to community care. I mean, that's really kind of it in a nutshell, isn't it?
It is, and I think that the takeaway message in our job, what we want to do, and a lot of what Steve has talked about related to the patient experience, is our hope is that despite this, veterans choose us. We want veterans to choose the VA. We're doing things that we are able to do within our purview and our complexity of our site to do that. We've been working closely with the Pittsburgh VA to bring specialists on site so that if you want to see your urologist, for example, you may not have to go down to VA Pittsburgh because we're now providing that service on site at Butler. So we're trying to address veterans' needs that way too.
Mm-hmm. Take another break. We have a few more minutes to chat with our guests, so please stick with us. We're learning more about the Mission Act. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR on a Wednesday. We'll be back after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. We're learning more about the Mission Act. This is of great importance to veterans and families of veterans. This was rolled out nationwide, including, of course, here in Butler at the Abraham VA Healthcare Center on North Duffy Road. With us in the studio to chat about this are the Interim Director of VA Butler Healthcare, Sharon Coyle, and Steve Jensen is also here. Steve is a customer service specialist. Are there more of you, or are you the only customer service specialist, Steve?
I would like to think that we're all customer service specialists.
Well, that's a good answer. That's a great answer. And we want to talk a little bit more about this urgent care, because the Mission Program establishes a new urgent care benefit that eligible veterans can access through the VA's network of urgent care providers. how do we find out what's in the network of urgent care providers? Is there a master list somewhere, Sharon Coyle, or what?
There's a locator tool online, and also you can call our facility, and we'll look it up for you if not. We don't have a master list published because it's ever-changing. You know, somebody could be in network today and we, you know, things happen and they're not in network tomorrow. So it's not a concrete list, but the locator tool is online and you can also call and we will find out for you which urgent care to go to.
Some folks might be, and I might be one of them, a little bit confused about just what exactly we mean by urgent care. I mean, is that appendicitis or broken arm or any of the above?
It's things that aren't emergency care, but urgent care. So you have the sniffles, you think you have strep throat.
Okay.
Maybe you're concerned that you fractured something. You know, these are the type of things that you would go to your Minute Clinic and your MedExpress for.
Mm-hmm. So that would be among the things that we're talking about here.
Correct.
For urgent care.
Right.
You mentioned that we now have the ability to bring some specialists from Pittsburgh to Butler. To the A.B. Abraham VA Healthcare Center. Do you have imaging capabilities there at that new center?
We have our
X-rays,
yeah. We don't have CT or MRI. We send those out to the community.
Mm-hmm. I can remember when they were... I'm a great sidewalk superintendent. I watched carefully as they were constructing that facility over a period of a year or so. And there were places it looked like they were... You know, shielding, putting in that special stuff that you need for imaging services. And you need that for x-rays, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Is there a long wait for that sort of thing?
Nope. No, we're good.
Walk in and you can get your x-rays done, huh?
Happens every day.
Yeah. You mentioned, Steve, that you deal in customer service not just with the Mission Act, but in other areas.
Yes, sir.
The VAs, are you involved for surveying veterans who have received treatment through the VA? You know, how did you like it? Can you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, that sort of thing?
Yeah, nationally we do. We have we have two different types of surveys that we send out. One is a little bit more extensive. It's about 60 questions long that's mailed to them. They probably have received it one time or another mm-hmm. Through the mail. But that actually gets sent back to D.C., and then they calculate all the information and send it to us in a report, and we also have access for it online. But it's going in great detail, and that's more about the experience they've had. When it comes to satisfaction that they've had, we use vSignals, which is a platform that we get real-time feedback. So if you went to the VA today, you probably get a little message in your email with a hyperlink clicking tell you to go to a survey. Mm-hmm. And you click on there and ask questions that are based on satisfaction, the ease, effectiveness, and the emotional component that we're looking for. So we get anywhere between about 50 to 100 of those a day back from them. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do with all this, especially with vSignals, is that we're trying to do real-time resolution. So that way, the SHEP that I was telling you about earlier, that can take about 3 months for it to completely gather the data. But we still get useful data, but it's not real-time. We use vSignals daily to resolve issues for veterans. So that way, they don't go months and weeks and stuff without having some type of resolution to their issue. So usually what we do, as soon as we get that survey in, depending if it's a certain condition, let's say they came in and they're having a hearing aid problem and they, you know, whatever have you. Well, instead of like going through six different individuals to try to get that answer, we just send the survey over to the audiology department and then they contact the veteran and resolve the issue. So we've been trying to do a lot better with that. And then another system that's going to be coming into play is PATS-R, which is a completely different system, but it deals with our patient advocacy program that we have. And veterans will also be able to do real-time feedback utilizing that system also if they're having certain issues. But when I say this, we get both positive feedback and negative feedback, recommendations, concerns. It doesn't always have to be negative in nature, but we've actually drove a lot of different things throughout our facility based on their recommendations that we've had. Another thing that we do for surveying veterans is we have the Veterans Input Pool, which is VIP, And it's a group of veterans that we ask them what they want to see from us. And we have a meeting, and a face-to-face meeting every month. And they let us know, like, what's working, what's not working, what we can do to better improve the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that we just started was the Women's Health Veterans Input Pool. With Women's Health, we have a group of women veterans that we are getting together to see what we can do to also meet their needs. And obviously, because it could be a specialized experience and stuff for them. So we're doing that also. But all this came from those surveys and trying to implement them across our VA.
Yes, women veterans may indeed have some of the same health concerns as men, but obviously some of them are going to be different as well. Yeah. Patient advocacy, what's that mean? What's that all about?
So, when we talk about the patient advocate, she's also our Veterans Experience Officer.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really trying to do is trying to create the best experience possible for every veteran that comes in within that facility. If they do run into a problem, they have a service level advocates. So each department has a service level advocate that has the information on how to resolve the issue. So that way it doesn't have to go to the patient advocate right away or to the director's office. We try to solve that problem at the lowest level possible because it's usually the most efficient way possible to get it resolved. If for whatever reason that service level advocate is not able to meet the expectations or doesn't have the information, then it's resorted back to the patient advocate, who then has a little bit more, authority to do certain things to make sure that that experience is above par for that veteran and we fix those issues. Or we have veterans who come in and want people to know how wonderful their doctor is or how wonderful the volunteer service people are up at the front desk. And so they also go to the patient advocate also, because everybody thinks it's always a negative thing, but we actually get a lot more positive than we do negative.
One other question for you. You've mentioned a couple of times a concern about the emotional component. Can you expand on that? What exactly do you mean by that, the emotional component?
One of the things that the VA has pushed, it's called Own the Moment training. And it's a national training that was brought into effect for the whole veterans experience. Just a little bit of a background, about 4 or 5 years ago is when they started making a huge putting that emotional component into play. Because all of our other service industries are doing the exact same thing, both private and, you know, VA related.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to add that emotional component into there. So Own the Moment training came into play. And what we're really trying to do with our employees is owning each individual moment that you have with a veteran, whether that be, you know, answering a question, asking them if they need help, asking them how they're doing for that day, what we can do better for them, really adding that emotional component into that service. And that's what's going to make them choose, you know, the Butler VA. And I always give people, like, have you ever had a favorite restaurant that you like to go to? I do, and their food is not the greatest. But I go there because of the emotional component when I walk in and they make me feel like family. And that's what we're trying to do, because they are our family. And it's the reason why we're there. And, you know, you can speak to a lot of people in the Butler VA. And the reason I chose, you know, that Butler VA is because of what they did for me and my whole process and stuff. And it was that emotional component that kept me there.
So what do you think, listeners? It sounds like it's a heck of a lot more than a fancy brand new building out there on North Duffy Road, huh?
Absolutely.
A lot
more than that.
Yeah. And if you're a veteran and not registered with the Veterans Administration, please do so. Especially female veterans. We got a lot more of those than we used to.
Absolutely.
Including some coming back from combat situations. Yeah. Final question, Sharon Coyle. Is there always a need for volunteers?
Absolutely. We couldn't do the work that we do without all of our volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
We always appreciate any time that people can give us. So if that's of interest to any listeners, please contact us. We love to work with our volunteers. We can't do it alone.
You might even get one of those red coats. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be fantastic.
Hey, thanks for updating us. This is really important stuff for veterans and family of veterans. And any confusion that we can allay here and information that we can pass on, it's good stuff.
Thank you.
Visiting with us today, the interim director of the VA Butler Healthcare, Sharon Coyle, and also customer service specialist Steve Jensen. Sharon, Steve, good to have you here today. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. Have you ever been to Prince Edward Island? I think most folks would say not only no, but maybe where is it anyway, Prince Edward Island? It's one of the provinces of Canada. You know, we think of Ontario, Manitoba, British Columbia, Prince Edward Island. Tiny, but it's a full province of Canada. We'll take a virtual visit with Catherine Reed, our next guest, coming up. She'll be visiting with us by telephone here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Please stick around. Back with more right after these words.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Chronic pain can be a headache. No, really. Chronic pain is defined as any constant or reoccurring pain lasting 3 months or longer, meaning migraine sufferers qualify for medical marijuana in the state of PA. Get relief without the side effects, and get on with your day. Call Compassionate Certification Centers at 888-316-9085 and ask if your pain qualifies for a medical marijuana card. The number is 888-316-9085. Or you can visit cccregister.com.
We're going to get the background story, listeners, of one of the most beloved novels of all time, really, Anne of Green Gables. That's on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Catherine Reed, who has authored a book called The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables. Catherine, nice to meet you. It's a pleasure to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about this book. I'm assuming that the majority of our readers are familiar with Anne of Green Gables, but maybe some are not. The main character in that novel is Anne Shirley, created, of course, by the author Lucy Maud Montgomery. And Lucy Maud Montgomery lived at least for a while, on Prince Edward Island, one of the maritime provinces of Canada. I did not know that until I got a review copy of your book, Catherine.
Oh, that Maud Montgomery spent about the first 35 years of her life on Prince Edward Island, or PEI,
no,
as it's often abbreviated?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, she put that little island on the literary map with the publication of this wonderful novel.
So what she wrote about in Anne of Green Gables was based very much on her own personal experiences in the early part of her life living there, I guess.
It was. You know, she went on to write a total of about 20 novels. After she married, it was a bit late. She married and she was in her late 30s. Her husband was a minister. They moved over to Ontario. But all except one of those 20 novels were based on Prince Edward Island. So it clearly had a profound influence on her, and she knew it intimately. She knew the way people lived there intimately. So she continued to use it for the settings that spoke to all of us.
I didn't realize she'd written that many novels. Anne of Green Gables was her first, though, right?
It was her first, correct. And you know, it stunned her and her publisher alike that it was popular almost instantly, and as you probably know now, it's sold well over 50 million copies, translated into over 35 different languages, and has spun off all of these musicals and movies, TV shows, plays, well as the very new Netflix series, Anne with an E.
Yeah, that's really unbelievable, and from her very first novel, it must have been a little bit of a disappointment to her that, you know, all the other stuff she wrote after that, and nothing really matched the fame of Anne of Green Gables, right?
It didn't, but her publisher and her readers kept demanding sequels. So she did continue to churn those out, and, you know, they were much loved, but that lasting character, Anne Shirley, it's how we're introduced to her, and her story is the orphan who arrives on the island. She had been in an orphanage in Nova Scotia, and brother and sister, Matthew and Marilla, want a boy to help with the farm and instead get this scrawny little red-haired girl who proceeds to charm everybody. And her imagination is so is sort of enticing to all of us, and her scrapes and her mishaps and her sheer goodness of spirit. So I think, all love that first novel best, because that's when we get to know her.
Anne of Green Gables, listeners, was written in, I think it was 1908. It was early 1900s. 1908, is that the correct date, Catherine?
Correct. That's when it was published. The author started it a year and a half or so earlier. Her grandparents were the post office for this community. So when Maud Montgomery would, take her turn delivering or, meeting people who needed to send or drop off mail, she too was able to sort of discreetly send off this manuscript, and she did get a number of rejections before this publisher in Boston picked her up, and as we know, the rest was history.
Yeah, thank goodness somebody picked it up. We hear these stories every once in a while about, one of the more famous novels of all time being rejected numerous times early on. Well, let's get to your book, because it's just a fantastic book, and it's beautiful. The photographs are, and there are hundreds of them in here. Are these all your photographs, by the way, Catherine?
No, I got to work with a wonderful photographer, Carrie Michaels, who lives up in Freeport, Maine, and then another photographer from Prince Edward Island, Nick Jay, also took some beautiful shots. So I had the lovely task of pulling some of those historical photographs from the archives, because Maud Montgomery had a camera in the late 1890s and was taking photos of people and places. And then she also colorized some of them in the 1920s. So I've included some of those, Carrie Michaels' photographs, Nick Jay's, as well as some photographs of the scrapbooks that Montgomery kept as a younger person that were just fascinating kind of windows into things that were mattering to her at a particular moment. There's over 200 images, and the contemporary photographs in particular, I think, are just stunning.
Yeah, most of them are in color. Some of the archive ones are black and white, but most are, and they are stunning. They're gorgeous. Listeners, a little bit about our guest, Catherine Reed, teaches writing, most recently at Warren Wilson College in Asheville, North Carolina, where she served as the director of the Creative Writing Program. She's also published a couple of works of nonfiction, Falling into Place and Coyote. Are those still in print, Catherine? Are those still available?
Those are still available, yeah. And those, that's where I revealed my personal interest in natural history and how it is that we inhabit the natural world. So this assignment to do undertake Maud Montgomery and Anne Shirley's relationship with the world outside our windows was a perfect fit for me.
I'm assuming that you traveled perhaps several times to Prince Edward Island to do your research, Catherine?
I did. I'd actually visited several times over the years and then, of course, spent several weeks up there while I was writing the novel. And I also lived for about 10 years on an island off the coast of Maine. So I had, I brought with me some sense of that island habitat and the sense of self-sufficiency amongst the islanders, how it is that you know you need to look out for each other and develop these intimate relationships with each other as well as with the land and the sea. And I certainly saw that throughout the novels and Montgomery's writing.
I've never been to Prince Edward Island. I've flown over it a number of times, but I've never actually been there. But I'm certainly, my interest is piqued by reading your book and looking at the gorgeous pictures. You also have a map, which I always like. Actually, it's the inside and the back cover of your book. Is Prince Edward Island relatively large, or I mean, can you drive through it in fairly short order? How big is it?
Well, it's 140 miles from one end to the other, and there's now a bridge, so you can drive to the island from Nova Scotia. You can fly in from another city into Charlottetown. There's a ferry as well that gets people there. Maybe acreage-wise, I think it's about the size of Delaware. A relatively small Canadian province, and it really is a stunningly beautiful kind of pastoral landscape where you get a sense of almost of timelessness, even though they are of the 21st century. There are just aspects of it that feel as though they could still be the same as when Anne Shirley and her friends wandered the haunted woods and the Lake of Shining Waters and the Birch Path, Lover's Lane, and you feel as though you could really see and sense, smell, hear exactly what they were experiencing.
So what about Green Gables? Is that based on a real house?
It is based on a real house, and it was actually relatives of the author, a brother and sister who lived in the house that gave her the inspiration for the house that Anne would certainly occupy with brother and sister Matthew and Marilla. And Canada's National Park Service has acquired that house and maintain it beautifully. You can enter these rooms or look into rooms, the bedrooms that were, you know, Anne's and Matthew's and Marilla's, the hired man. It truly looks as though it were late 1800s, early 1900s. There's the pantry. There's living areas. It's a wonderful balance they do between the fictional world that the characters inhabited and the real world characteristics of how people did live at that time.
The town that L.M. Montgomery invented for the setting for Anne of Green Gables, I've always pronounced it Avonlea. I don't know whether I'm right on that or not.
Numerous pronunciations. I think the Avonlea might be the more
Avonlea.
Typical one.
Well, I appreciate hearing it from you. you would know. But that's based on a real village on the northern coast of Prince Edward Island, right? The town of Cavendish.
Correct. So if you go to Cavendish and you know, several hundred thousand people want to every year to see these haunts of Anne Shirley and friends, you can... there's Cavendish Beach, which was what the Anne Shirley saw when she came, those beautiful white sand beaches with the sandstone red cliffs along the edge, the wonderful rolling agricultural fields, the woods. Of course, there's also a golf course there now and, you know, more of the 21st century trappings, the tourist sites, the, you know, kind of neon-colored canoes, kayaks for rent. But if you... go towards it somewhat with blinders on, you pretty soon enter that world, that rustic pastoral world of our beloved characters.
Is there a bit of autobiographical nature to the character of Anne Shirley? And do you think that Montgomery based that character a little bit on her own younger self?
Definitely. And I think that was one of the surprises to me and really one of the reasons why I was eager to take on this project. When I read Montgomery's journals, which she kept meticulously throughout her life, and then they were published in the mid-1980s by a couple scholars who edited them, to see the parallels between Montgomery's life and Anne Shirley's was quite surprised by it, that there were just so many similarities that I felt as though Anne was really this idealized young self of the author. And I think that really enhances the realness of Anne, and particularly in the way they both inhabit the landscape, that they both look to you know, trees and flowers as animate beings. They see them as spirits, you know, as friends, as sisters. That definitely came out of Maud Montgomery's life. She felt as though that you really had to companion the land to know it well, and her love of it, her intimacy with it, I think is part of the reason why Prince Edward Island holds such a draw for us, that we really want to go there because she made it so real.
Listeners, if you read Anne of Green Gables maybe a long time ago, or maybe you've seen some of the movie or TV adaptations, you will be most interested in this book by Catherine Reed. And I can't tell you enough about how gorgeous the pictures are. I'm just looking at one right now of the ever-changing sky near Cavendish Beach, and it's just spectacular. Flowers, interior shots of the buildings, and even a photograph of L.M. Montgomery herself. I'd never seen a picture of her before. This is just a wonderful effort, Catherine. What a beautiful book you have here.
Well, many thanks. It was really a joy to pull it all together, and a real pleasure to work with the press, who, you know, ultimately did all of that design and layout. So I think readers will be pretty impressed, and if they can't get to Prince Edward Island themselves, this is a wonderful way to take that vicarious journey and feel fairly well satisfied.
Well, I've already taken the vicarious journey by reading your book, and I think it's going to be on my bucket list to go there. Is there a website where listeners can find out more about you and your book?
They can find more about me on at CatherineReed.org. And Timber Press also has a site about the book. So, I hope they do some exploring, particularly with the book itself. I think they will feel rewarded.
Gorgeous photographs, listeners, in this book. The title, The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables, the enchanting island that inspired L.M. Montgomery, Prince Edward Island, one of the maritime places in eastern Canada. The author of The Landscapes of Anne of Green Gables, Catherine Reed, she's been our guest here on It's Your Turn for the last few minutes. Catherine, a delight to meet you and talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Okay, so long now.
So
in today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Goan Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time. If I'm trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels, with Goan Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Goan Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Goan Postal Butler.
Everyone's trying to beat the heat, so why bring it into your kitchen? There's no need to slave over a hot stove when you can go to Michael's Restaurant. They're cooking burgers, hoagies, pizzas, soups, and salads to feed the entire family. So relax, stay cool, and take the family to Michael's Restaurant, Route 422 in Butler.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Songs. everybody knows one song sung. Every garden grows warm. Me and you are subject to the blues now and then. But when you take the blues and make a song, you sing them out again. You sing them out again. Song sung blue, weeping like a willow. Song sung blue, sleeping on my pillow. Funny thing, but you can sing it with a cry in your voice. And before you know it, get to feeling good. You simply got no choice. Me and you are subject to the blues now and then. Take the blues and make a song. You sing them out again. Song sung blue, weeping like a willow. Song sung blue, sleeping on my pillow. Funny thing, but you can sing it with a cry in your voice. And before you know it, start feeling good. You simply got no choice.